Don't worry, he's going to be fine. In fact, he's going to be more than fine. He is going to be super. His name is Barry Allen. He is a haunted young man that witnessed the death of his mother, the murder of his mother. And at least in the CW's retelling of the story, he is haunted by the fact that not only did he witness that death, his father was incarcerated as the implicator of the murder. Therefore, he is a young man that is obsessed with finding a killer. He is so obsessed that his obsession has led him into his career choice. Barry Allen is a CSI. And by the way, he just got struck by lightning. Now, I'm going to read you some facts about lightning. If you wish to dispute them, please do not come see me after the service. Please contact weather.com because these are their facts. How hot is a lightning bolt? Only about 54,000 degrees Fahrenheit. That is roughly 5 times hotter than the surface of the sun. Lightning flashes more than 3 million times a day worldwide. The average lightning bolt can release enough energy to operate a 100 light bulb for more than 3 months straight, about 250 kilowatt hours of energy. By the way, that's 1.3 jillion gigabytes, whatever it was, by the Back to the Future people. The bolt of electricity streaks at 62 million miles per hour. That's impressive. Here's the thing I didn't know. I knew lightning was fast. I knew it was hot. All that energy travels along the path that is no wider than your thumb. So that streak that you see that looks like it's so, really, truthfully, it's only about as wide as your thumb. And by the way, lightning kills about 2,000 people a year. So in spite of what we just saw, stay inside and away from the electric, the windows and the metal when it's lightning outside. This is dangerous stuff. But for the purpose of this series, the bolt did not kill Barry Allen. Instead, due to a science project that was in the area with him when the power strike happened, he gets transformed. Who is he? He is the Flash. He labels himself as the fastest man alive, a founding member of the Justice League, nicknamed the Scarlet Speedster for the outfit that he eventually adopts. And if Barry Allen runs at the speed of light for more than 5 minutes, I want this superpower. He burns 8 billion calories. Ooh, wouldn't you like to have that? All the bread I want, and I just have to take a little run around the block when I'm done, and it's all gone. That would be just totally awesome. Now, we'll get more into his powers next week. I do want to stop and give some credit where credit is due. The Flash has been around since the 1940s. There are a lot of different timelines and comic books when it comes to the Flash. For the purpose of this series, we want to give a thank you to the CW who made the series, and we're going to borrow some of their clips to do this particular series because we want to talk about the Flash. And maybe you're thinking about, this is counterproductive. I mean, this year, what is our theme? Be still and know that I am God. So why on earth in a year when we're trying to learn how to be still, why on earth would we go the fact of taking a superhero series? I mean, we do superhero series. It seems like we do one a year. Believe it or not, it has not been one a year, but it seems like we get here once every 18 months. We end up with a but why would you pick this one? I mean, we should be picking something that isn't about speed, but be assured there's a point. You see, because with all that speed, you would think Barry could do anything that he wants. But really, with all that speed, Barry has some lessons to learn. And you know what the first lesson he has to learn? How to slow down. When he's moving all, with all of that speed, it's not like you can go from zero to stop in an instant. You have to slow down a little bit. Now, it happens so fast for him, our eyes can't catch it. But he had to learn how to slow down to use his powers effectively. And so that's where we're going. We're going to learn about, in our frantically paced, overhyped, overspeeded lives, before I can be still, I got to first learn how to slow it down. And maybe the best way to learn how to slow down is to maybe take a look at four lessons. This is a four-part sermon series. It's going to be a very quick sermon series, pun intended there. We're going to look at four lessons that we can learn by slowing down our lives. So lesson one, that's what we're covering today. Slowing down allows us to see Jesus for who he is. Let me read a story for you. It comes from Luke chapter 9, verses 28 through 36. About 8 days after Jesus said this, he took Peter, John, and James with him and went up onto a mountain to pray. As he was praying, the appearance of his face changed. His clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. The two men, Moses and Elijah, appeared in glorious splendor, talking with Jesus. They spoke about his departure, which he was about to bring to fulfillment at Jerusalem. Peter and his companions were very sleepy, but they became fully awake. They saw his glory and the two men standing with him. As the men were leaving Jesus, Peter said to him, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us put up three shelters, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." He did not know what he was saying. While he was speaking, a cloud appeared and covered them, and they were afraid. As they entered the cloud, a voice came from the cloud saying, "This is my son, whom I have chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, they found that Jesus was alone. The disciples kept this to themselves and did not tell anyone at the time what they had seen. Now, I am not a big time travel person. Time travel shows give me a headache. They get me confused. I don't understand how you can go back in time and change. Time travel shows give me a headache. But if you would give me the power to have a time travel moment, and you said, "Barry, you could pick any instance in the Bible and you could go back and witness this, just witness it, not change it, witness it, we'll allow you to travel through time and witness it," I just want to let you know something. This experience would be at least in my top five. I would love to be standing on this mountain the day that Jesus gets transfigured. And you know what? It's because it's one of those few minutes in history that God lets us see behind the curtain. Now, a lot of times when we come to God, there's always these things that he doesn't let us see everything that's going to happen. Some of that for our own sanity. Okay, but at this instance in time, God literally pulls back the curtain and says, "Let me let you look behind the curtain. Let me let you see what's really going on." And when the curtain gets pulled back, they get to see Jesus in all of his glory. And they get to see Moses and Elijah join in. Then they got to hear the voice of God. And I just want to say, what a sight that is to behold. But I want you to notice something else. Those disciplines, do you see them? What disciplines? Yeah, the ones we just spent 7 weeks talking about. Take a quick look at the story. Jesus took Peter, James, and John up to the mountain alone, so he pressed for some solitude. They were tired and needed to rest, so they needed their beauty sleep, it says, so they needed a restful moment. They went up there. What was their purpose? Well, they went to pray. They were told to listen. Isn't that what the voice said? To listen. They had to keep it to themselves, so they had to wait. Jesus even told them, "Don't go down and start telling everybody what you see." Could you imagine what it was like having that kind of a secret? To come down and not be able to tell anybody what you had just witnessed, the patience that would have to take? By the way, Peter saw it, and even though he didn't really realize what he was saying, you do get the problem with what Peter said, right? He said, "Let me build three shelters. One for Moses, one for Jesus, one for Elijah." So he basically put Jesus on the same plane with Moses and Elijah. He didn't even get what he was seeing. We'll talk about that in a minute. But he still wanted to do it. Why did he want to build the shelters? Well, building the shelter in Jewish times, that was a testament to saying, let's worship. So he wants to have a celebration. So all of those disciplines that we just covered, they're there, except for where was the meditation? Well, there was plenty of that. See, this story is actually mentioned in three of the four Gospels. And well, there was some meditation going on. Listen to the conversation in Matthew chapter 17, verse 10. Disciples asked him, why then do the teachers of the law say Elijah must come first? So coming out of this transfiguration, they want to have more answers. They're trying to ponder what they've seen. Mark chapter 9, verse 10 says, they kept all this matter to themselves, but notice what they were doing, discussing what rising from the dead meant. So this experience of seeing Jesus for who he is and seeing this moment behind the curtain, they didn't just store it away and say, what a cool event. I'm glad I got to see that one. I wish I had a camera. It caused them to start asking questions about their own faith. And you know what? When you get a good look at Jesus, that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to make you ask the hard questions. So this morning, we are going to take a still view of Jesus. So there's some requirements to do this. You got to take everything else that's going on in your mind, what you're going to have for lunch, put it to the side for a minute. That list of to-dos that you've got to do, think about them in about 20 minutes, okay? All of the stuff that you brought with you in the building, all the baggage that you drug in from this week, 20 minutes, just put it to the side. I want you to get a still view, and I want you to appreciate exactly what Peter, James, and John got to see, and when this was written in the scripture, why this was put here. Let's take a look at the descriptions. And by the way, I mentioned this was in three scriptures, and well, they all kind of stated it differently. Luke describes him as his face changed, so his physical appearance went from what they were used to seeing to something different. His clothes became as bright as a flash of lightning. I gave you all of those statistics about what lightning looks like, and we've all been outside when lightning flashes, and when you're on one of those really, really dark nights, and then the lightning flashes and it's so bright, have you ever had to put your hands over your eyes? Because it's bright. And so they're standing here, and all of a sudden, they see this. Can you imagine what that would have looked like? Matthew writes it like this. His face, well, again, we go with what he looks like. His face shone like the sun. Anybody here ever tried to stare at the sun? By the way, they say don't do that. Okay? Not a good idea. Most people, if you don't wear glasses, what do you put on when you go outside? Sunglasses, because you're trying to shield your eyes because the sun is so bright. For me, I have those fancy ones. They transition and they go from my regular glasses to sunglasses so I can look cool when I'm outside. They don't make me look cool, okay? But they do help me see clearly. But can you imagine what that must have been like? I mean, we're not talking about miles. We're probably talking about from where I am to maybe the front pew right there. That's how close they're standing to this light. And Matthew says his face shone like the sun and his clothes became as bright as lightning coming down. It was just so bright, just as white as it could be. Mark puts it this way. He says his clothes became dazzling white. So there was a sparkle to what was going on. And well, whiter than anyone in the world could bleach them. And if you've ever looked at something, we've had snow here in the past few weeks. Unfortunately, when the snow was really all over the ground, it stayed kind of overcast. Because have you ever been outside when the snow is new and it's all white and the sun comes out and you're trying to drive and there's a glare that actually comes off of the bright white snow and you squint even more because of the reflection of the whiteness of, that's what they're looking at. It's an incredible image. Now, I need you to see everything about this image. They're all about light. Makes sense. Jesus called himself the light of the world. Jesus was letting them see just the light that he is. And this idea, he was giving them an actual view of what the light looks like. So bright, you can't even look at it. They expressed the idea of purity. That's what you see in this picture. When God pulls back the curtain, Jesus is not only light, but he is pure. Think about those three descriptions. How many times have they expressed the idea of white? White. There's no blemish, no mark. It's like the yard when the snow is just finished and there's no footprints on it. It's light. And you know what? I skipped one. The idea of power and then the idea of purity. I put them in the reverse order on the slide. So then we have the idea of power. I'll go back to that one. And you see that he called it lightning, sun, things that were there. So that's what they got to see. They got to see the light. They got to see the power. And they got to see the purity. Funny thing is, James, Peter, and John got to go up on the mountain. You know what's the only gospel that doesn't talk about this particular event? John. He doesn't record this event. I wonder if he took the idea of don't talk about this literally, but you know what? We do know and understand that John had an image of Jesus that he painted also. You see, because at this moment, they got the glimpse behind the scene, and they got to see the actual Son of God. Well, this is how John described the Son of God. Revelation chapter 1, verses 13 through 15. And among the lampstands was someone like the Son of Man, dressed in a robe reaching down to his feet, with a golden sash around his chest. Notice the mention here. The hair on his head was white like wool, as white as snow. And his eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in the furnace. His voice was like the sound of a rushing water. I got a feeling when John got to this vision in Revelation, and he actually got to see Jesus, this image that he saw at the Transfiguration, he's like, I know this guy. I saw him before. I know this guy. I saw him standing on the mountainside. I know exactly who this is, even though he didn't have the long hair and the beard and the mustache and the little clothes that we give him, and he didn't look like what we would think Jesus would look like. But John knew exactly who he was dealing with. He said, I know this person. This is the Son of Man. This is Jesus. Now, I want to talk about the connection that gets made in this story, because I think this is really the focal point. If you really want to understand who Jesus is, the image is awesome. Marvel and DC could not draw something that looks as awesome as this must have looked. And to be standing there looking at this, it's an image these guys would never forget. But this connection that is made in this appearance is important. And it's important to the guys that were standing on the mountainside, but it's important to us. Because all three narrations talk about this idea of Moses and Elijah. All three of them mentions this. And it's an interesting choice of characters, because, I mean, there was a lot he could have picked, right? I mean, he could have picked Abraham. Could have picked David, right? That would have been an awesome one. He could have brought back Solomon. That's probably a character we'd all like to meet. He could have picked all of these characters. He could have brought Joseph. He could have done Jacob. He could have done Isaac. He had all of these characters that he could have put on his left and his right, but he chose Moses and Elijah. Why? What's their significance? And this is not talking about Revelation at all. This is just talking about Old Testament, that you understand exactly who it is. Well, he picked Moses because Moses was the great lawgiver. Think about how many times in the Bible we hear this phrase, the law of Moses. Was it really Moses' law? No, it wasn't Moses' law. Whose law was it? It's God's law. But who did God use to deliver the message to the people? That was Moses. As a matter of fact, Moses was the one that wrote the first five books of the Bible. He even tells us that in Deuteronomy, he says that God told me to put it all in a book and give it to the Israelites. So Moses is the author of those books. And he put them out there. And so when the Israelites think law, when they think rules, when they think regulations, when they think God spoke and said, thou shalt not, Moses was the man they thought about. Now, when it came to prophets, everybody thought about Elijah, at least most Jews. I mean, he's the prophet that never tasted death, right? He's the man that when his life was done, there was no tombstone put in his place that says, "Here lies Elijah." No, what does it say? It says that a fiery chariot came down and says, "Hey, look, I'm giving you a free ride to heaven." And he climbed on board, and Elisha watched Elijah ride off literally into the sunset. Again, another awesome picture. But when the Jews hear about Elijah, that's who they think about. Remember, Elijah was the prophet that God sent to talk to Israel during one of their darkest moments. This is the man. This is the guy that called down fire from heaven. This is the prophet. And so Jesus is making a point by putting himself. Now notice where he is. Jesus doesn't put them off to his left. And doesn't put him off to his right. By the way, I think James and John are probably thinking at this point, aren't we the ones that asked to be on God's left and right hand? No, it's Moses and Elijah. You get what's happening here. Jesus puts himself in the middle of them because Jesus understood the connection. He was the fulfillment of the law. Matthew chapter 5, verse 17. Jesus says, "Do not think that I have come to abolish the law or the prophets. I have come to not to abolish them, but to fulfill them." Jesus wanted them to see in this picture that these laws that you've been observing all these years and all these festivals and all of these things that you do, you understand, they were but road signs along your life to point you to me. That's what he's saying. Jesus came to fulfill those laws given by Moses. Jesus didn't come to set them all aside. He came to fulfill that sacrificial system that they had been doing all those years when they were sacrificing the sheep and the goats, and they were trying to pay for their own sins with their own resources. And Jesus says, all that is ending because the fulfillment of the law is here. Now, not only did he come to fulfill the law, we find out in Luke chapter 24, verse 44, he's the culmination of the prophecies. He said to them, "This is what I told you while I was still with you. Everything must be fulfilled that is written about me in the law of Moses, the prophets, and the Psalms." So that means that Jesus was basically letting them know, you think prophecy is important, you get the idea, I am checking all the boxes. All those things that they said was going to happen when the Messiah. No, I am not coming to conquer Rome at this point. I am not coming to be the king like you said. I am coming to be God's king. And I'm going to give my life for you. But just so you know, I am the Messiah. And I check all the boxes. All of those prophecies from the virgin birth to being born in Bethlehem to the fact that he was going to work miracles. All those things. Jesus checked all the boxes. And as he was standing there between Moses and Elijah, that's the image that you get. You understand, all those laws that you were given, all those prophecies that you were given, they are to the side of me because I am it. I am what you have been waiting for. The Apostle Paul puts it this way in Ephesians chapter 1, verses 7 through 10. In him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of sins, in accordance with the riches of God, God's grace that he lavished on us, with all wisdom and understanding, he made known to us the mystery of his will. Huh. You understand this whole God thing is no longer a mystery. To the Jews, God was a mystery. He was a man behind a curtain. To us, there is no mystery who God is. We know exactly who God is. Known the mystery of his will according to his good pleasure, which he purposed in Christ to be put in effect when the times reach their fulfillment, to bring unity to all things in heaven and under the earth under Christ. What a picture. All of this history that you've been dealing with, you get it, right? It all culminated with this one person called Jesus. That's who you're supposed to be looking at. Not the minister. You watch me. I'm a bonehead, folks. I will mess it up. Trust me. Okay? If you don't believe me, just watch. I will mess it all up over and over and over again. You're not looking to the elders. You're not looking to a worship leader. You're not looking to somebody that you find on your television. You're not looking to somebody who came along and said, I have something new to add to what God's word said. You get it. This is all about Jesus. This is all about what are you going to do with this individual? That is what Christianity boils down to. What do you do with Jesus? All the rest of the stuff is icing on the cake. If you don't answer this question right, all the rest of it does you absolutely, positively no good. And in case all of these images and all of these things that were going on and Moses and Elijah going in, they should have given Moses the guitar and Elijah the drums and they could have had a cool worship service, right? That would have missed the point. They weren't there to worship. They were there to get an understanding. And so that they didn't miss it, God said, I am going to give you a sermon at the end of the object lesson. So they got the object lesson, Jesus bright and white. They got the extended object lessons, Moses and Elijah. And then God said, here's the sermon. And God's much better at preaching sermons than I am because it takes me a while. God managed to do it in one sentence. This is my son whom I have chosen. Listen to him. That was the sermon. That was the whole sermon. No outline, no PowerPoint slides, although he did a really cool object lesson first, okay, to get their attention. No PowerPoint slides, no videos, no nothing. This was God's sermon to Peter, James, and John. What you have witnessed here, you understand what you saw. This is my son, not a son. This is the Son of God. And here is the only thing you have to do to get all of your ducks in a row. Here it is. Listen to him. That's it. And remember, we talked a couple weeks ago, it's one of the online sermons about the spiritual discipline of listening. Listening isn't just hearing. Listening is taking what you hear and putting it into action. John later writes in Revelation, and I think maybe this is that point at which maybe John understood what he saw on that hillside that day. He writes in Revelation chapter 5, verses 4 and 5, I being John, wept and wept because no one was found who was worthy to open the scroll and look inside. Then one of the elders said to me, do not weep. See, the lion and of the tribe of Judah, the root of David, has triumphed, and he is able to open the scroll and its seven seals. You get it, right? This is what Jesus was sent here for. It was Jesus alone that was chosen for this redemptive mission. Nobody else. You put your faith in anything else than except for Jesus, you have put your faith in a dry well. Not going to work. You can get to heaven and you can list all the beautiful things that you did here on the planet, and God really only has one question for you. What did you do with Jesus? Who? Yeah, him. Well, he was a nice teacher. I heard he did some cool object lessons. He healed some people. Yeah, I heard the Easter story, God, and I understand that. That sounds really good that he came and he was nailed to a cross and put in the grave and he rose again and he ascended to heaven and he's got all... I know who Jesus is. I didn't ask you if you knew who he was. God doesn't care if you can give him all the Jeopardy answer questions. Here's the question. What did you do with him? What did you do with this man named Jesus? Did you acknowledge him as the Son of God? And more importantly, did you listen to him with your life and follow him? Those are the questions that we need to see from this particular lesson. It's funny that God ended his sermon with this point. Listen, which means I have to slow down and pay attention. You notice how quickly Peter wanted to move on. Right? Peter had his own ideas, right? Let's build a church on this mountain. Can you know how many people want to come to the church building where the transfiguration, we could call this the first church of the transfiguration. Do you know how many people we could come? Do you know what the offering place would look like if we did that? Well, you know what we could do, God, if we just built something here and we brought people here? You missed the point, Peter. This was not a message you were supposed to bring people to. This was a message that you were going to take off of the mountain. And once you understood what you saw, then you were going to see it. See, for the moment, Jesus told them, don't tell anybody what you saw. Stay put. Let it perk in your mind. Stay tuned. Because you think this is awesome? You think the moment you saw me transfigured on a mountainside was awesome? You ain't seen nothing yet. Because Easter's coming. You haven't seen anything yet. This is just the tip of the iceberg. But how many times do we blow past this? I mean, we come into this in such a way that we just blow right past this moment. This moment when we decide who Jesus is. You see, God is asking them to take a momentary pause. And then when it was all done, there was a lifetime of go. You get it, right? These men, Peter, James, and John, became the core foundation of what we now call the church. Peter delivered the first gospel message on the day of Pentecost. James became the first martyr for the church. John became the man that would write not just one New Testament book, but he wrote three others plus Revelation. He wrote five. These were going to be core pieces, and God wanted to make sure they got it. Don't lose sight of it. Don't lose it amongst the pews and amongst the sign and amongst the music. We are here but for one reason. One person. His name is Jesus. And the question we have to ask ourselves, what are we going to do with him? I'm going to ask Patty to make her way. I didn't say worship team. I'll say Patty, her way, and Ken, his way, and head over. And